Underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. The Map of Salt and Stars is the debut novel by Syrian-American writer Jennifer Zeynep Jugadar. It tells the story of a family forced to flee their homeland's violence, personalizing a country in a struggle that to many readers exists only in news headlines. It is the story of two girls living 800 years apart, a modern-day Syrian refugee seeking safety, and a medieval adventurer apprentice to a legendary mapmaker. It shows the path of exile and the triumph of courage. The book is The Map of Salt and Stars, and it's a pleasure to welcome Jennifer Zeynep Jugadar to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
What was the impetus to write the novel and to tell this particular story?
So I'm Syrian American. I was born in New York City, but obviously growing up in the Syrian diaspora, I'm connected to Syria in a way that for me is constant, unavoidable. So after 4 years of war, when I first started writing this book, again, it was 2015, so the war had been going on for 4 years, because it was always on my mind, because I was very aware of what was going on, not just from a level of what was being said in the news, but on a more personal level, and aware of the loss that was happening of heritage, of people, of history, that I was thinking about it a lot. And I was thinking about, one, the ways that I would, the things that I wanted to say to the people around me, that I wanted to tell a story and tell it from a different perspective. Because I think when we hear about the Syrian refugee crisis and the war in the news, we almost never get a perspective from an actual Syrian person or someone in the diaspora. And so I wanted to talk about that. And also I wanted to talk about, yes, we've lost a lot, but also what do we have left, you know, that can't be lost, the things that we can take with us, even though there's so much tragedy.
Being here in the United States, what is your relationship to what is going on in your home country? And that feeling of is there a disconnect growing up, or do you always feel it?
Well, so first of all, let me talk a little bit about what is a home country, because I was born here. I'm an American citizen. I'm Syrian American.
Right.
So I don't consider Syria my home country, but I do consider it obviously a part of me and a part of who I am. And obviously I have ties to it through family and through history and identity. But, you know, growing up in the diaspora, sometimes it can feel like you are sort of a part of two places, or you belong in two places, but you also don't really belong to either of those places. But I think the way that I try to think about it now is that both America and Syria are parts of me. And I have a unique perspective as somebody growing up in the Syrian diaspora. I have a different perspective than somebody who was born and grew up in Syria. But of course, it doesn't mean that these things don't affect me. They just affect me in maybe a different way. And so in The Map of Salt and Stars, the protagonist in the contemporary storyline, who is a Syrian-American girl born in New York City, who returns to Syria with her family in 2011, just before war breaks out, and then loses her home and becomes a refugee. There's a reason that I made that character Syrian-American and someone who is growing up in the diaspora, because that's a perspective that I felt that I could talk about much more readily than to talk about someone who was born and grew up in Syria, because I didn't feel that was my story to tell.
How far removed was it? Were your parents born?
My father was born in Syria.
In Syria. Because it's interesting that you mentioned that, because, I mean, I consider myself, you know, we talk about our homeland, and you think about, I was born in this country as well. I think of myself as an Irish person, and you think of that as the place where, you know, your family came from. But much different from what you're talking about, because of the horror that's going on in that place, that you become aware of, that you're always aware of, or you become aware of when war strikes?
Well, I mean, I think that if you have ties to a place, even if you just see it on the news, let's say you have no connection, no personal connection, even if you just see it on the news, this is a place that, at least for me, and I think this is true for a lot of other people too, who grew up in diaspora, that This is a place that you've heard about your whole life, that your family hands down stories to you about, that they say about this city or that person or this, you know, particular experience they had as a child, this street that they grew up on. And so you grow up with this knowledge of this place that even if you've never been there, you feel connected to. And especially if you're able to return later on in life, then you build your own connections. But that even just through your parents, especially if it is only one generation removed, there's always that connection. And so when you hear in the news about like, oh, this place or this city or this neighborhood that is experiencing violence, you feel an immediate visceral reaction. At least I do. But you also, I think the other thing is that, yes, Syria is experiencing horror. It is experiencing trauma. And Syrian people and people in exile or displacement or diaspora are experiencing grief for the things that have been lost. But at the same time, one thing that I wanted to talk about in the Map of Salt and Stars was I wanted to focus not just on that grief and that trauma, and I didn't want to put that at the center of the book. And instead, what I put at the center of the book was hope, because I wanted to talk about the ways that people who are experiencing these things are also, because all as human beings, we all do this when we experience pain or trauma or grief, we resist by trying to find moments of joy and of hope and of creativity. And so there are a lot of moments in this book where I specifically wanted to talk about the moments we have with family, with cooking together, with laughing, with singing, with painting a painting of one city, even if it's damaged by violence, of loving these places and these people, and specifically of telling our stories. That when we tell our stories and we recognize that our voices have value, even if, for example, maybe in the way that Syrian folks are talked about in the news, their voices are not always valued. But that if we recognize in our own communities that our voices have value and we keep telling our stories, that we can hold on to that hope and remind ourselves that not everything has been lost.
That is such an interesting point of this idea that, that a person who's actually going through it, it's not so much convincing other people that it's important, but even convincing yourself.
When I was writing the Map of Salt and Stars, I was thinking about the fact that when I was growing up, I didn't see Arab Americans, Syrian Americans, Muslim Americans in literature. I really just didn't see them. So I didn't grow up with that knowledge that we could be the heroes of our own stories. And that's so important. Yes, it is definitely about convincing other people that our voices matter, but it is also about reminding ourselves that our voices matter. Because for a lot of us, we haven't grown up with that message. It's an adult book, but it also has been received very well as sort of a young adult crossover and by teens. And I'm super excited about that, because if even for some kids reading this, if they are Arab American, Syrian American, Muslim, that they're reading this and they're thinking like, oh, wow, I can see myself in some small way. That it, to me, is like, wow, if I had had that growing up, would have meant a lot to me.
Let's talk about the novel specifically and bring us to 2011 and where these characters are as war breaks out.
So the main storyline, the contemporary storyline, is about a 12-year-old Syrian-American girl named Noor who is growing up in New York City. Her father has just died of cancer. So her mother moves her two older sisters and Noor back to the city where she grew up, Homs, in Syria. And she does that to be closer to family, to have more support. She's, you know, struggling in her career also. And she says, look, you know, maybe it would be better for the family to be here. But it's just the timing is very bad. And shortly thereafter, war breaks out. There's conflict and they lose their home. And so their decision to leave is really a decision based on survival of, okay, we have to go where people can help us, where we have family or resources. And so they decide to leave Syria, and they end up moving south through the Levant and then across North Africa, west across North Africa. And meanwhile, as this is going on, Noor is not only adjusting to life in Syria because she's never been there, but she obviously is tied to this place. This is part of who she is. But she is sort of, when they leave, she's sort of lost home twice, if you think about it. She's lost home in New York City, and then she's lost home in Syria also. So as she's experiencing this loss, she's telling herself the story that her father told her of a 12th century Muslim mapmaker from a small city called Ceuta, which is now a Spanish city surrounded by Morocco across the Strait of Gibraltar from mainland Spain. And this mapmaker, who is a real historical figure, by the way, she is telling herself the story of how this mapmaker went about making the most accurate map of the world ever made to that date, which was in 1154. And so these stories follow the same geographical path, but separated by 800 years.
The mother is a cartographer. That's a fascinating aspect of it.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. So Noor's mother is also a cartographer.
When you look at the story of going from place to place, it was 7 different countries that ultimately go through. Mm-hmm. So that is turbulence just extended over and over and over and over again. And I guess the hope is to find whatever home is, right?
Well, the hope is that there's life after the trauma of displacement, and the knowledge that, and as Noor learns over the course of the book, that you can redefine what home is also into something you can take with you. That home doesn't have to be a geographical place.
Yeah.
You can lose a city, you can lose a whole country, you can lose a house, but there are some things that if you redefine home as your heritage or a story or family stories or the people that are with you, whether they're alive or whether they've passed on, they can still be with you. All of those things are things you can take with you wherever you are. So I think over the course of, as the map of Salt and Stars progresses and the journey progresses, Noor learns to redefine home for herself so that she doesn't lose it.
When you started this project, about what year was it when you started writing the novel?
2015.
Okay. So we are just, at that point, just going into the election cycle. And Syria and refugees becomes a topic of conversation in this country. Does that inform this at all in the sense of piquing your interest and wanting to add a voice to what is being said by others who obviously do not know as much about it as you do?
Well, I mean, I will say that I was frustrated with how it was being discussed in the news. It is, especially as a Syrian American person with more of an intimate relationship to this country and these people. I mean, these are my people too, in a way. So for me to be listening to the news and listening to having the humanity of Syrian refugees debated, to listening to them talked about in a way that is dehumanizing, that is fear-mongering, is frustrating. And when I was writing this book, I was, yes, in the back of my mind, sure, I was thinking about these things. But, you know, when you're writing, you have to kind of put that aside, because my responsibility as a writer is, yes, to talk a little bit about that, to give some knowledge of that political background. But my primary responsibility is to talk about these people, this family, how does this impact them directly? So when, for example, it's discussed very briefly how difficult it is to enter the U.S. as a refugee, because it's extremely difficult, and they are vetted in very intense ways. When that's discussed, it's discussed in terms of how it impacts them directly. And that was one of the reasons I chose a younger narrator, because I wanted to have someone through whose eyes I could see things in a very immediate way, in a visceral way, and always come back to that, like, how is this affecting this person, Noor, her family, and how is it affecting them emotionally and in an immediate sense of having their needs met and trying to just find a safe place and to find a place where they can just be a happy family again with what they have left. Happiness is a, and maybe that's the wrong term. I think the family is seeking healing. I think that they're seeking safety, for sure, physical safety, but also just to be seen as people. Because so often, and we see this in the news also, refugees and migrants and displaced people get discussed in a way that is very dehumanizing, in a way that ignores the suffering they're going through and really doesn't present them as whole people oftentimes. And I think that as this family is moving across these borders, I think the reader gets a feeling, certainly Noor gets a feeling, that they are not really being seen in their wholeness, and that what they've been through is not really being seen completely. And that's frustrating, because they want to find safety, but when you're crossing a border and you're just being seen as sort of a number, or like someone who's undesirable, or somebody that is, that people are afraid of, and for no reason really, without basis, that's a frustrating experience, especially for a child who is like, I don't understand why people are seeing us this way.
It's safety, but in some way it's also acceptance, right? It's acceptance of being a human being and having some compassion, empathy, and love toward you.
certainly they're seeking compassion. And I think that they, at times, they do find compassion. In the Map of Salt and Stars, they're taken in by another family at one point who are also displaced, who have almost nothing left, but they choose to share what they have with this family. I was speaking to the culture of Arab hospitality and warmth and sharing with people, feeding people, because that is a big part of our culture. I think that they try as much as possible throughout this book to present in their little family, their small, mini community of these two families that come together. They try to present each other with as much compassion and empathy as they can, because they know that they're forming almost a little bubble where they're like, look, we're going to take care of each other no matter what happens.
When you started writing the novel, did you always know where you were going to end up?
In terms of plot?
Yes.
Well, so I'm one of these writers that I really have to know where I'm going before I start. The basic idea was this two timeline story where they follow each other geographically, but more specifically that it was a person who was undergoing trauma, specifically the trauma of displacement, who is telling themselves a story in order to bring themselves comfort as they are searching for strength and safety. I went through several iterations of this book in sort of a short story form. I tend to do that until I hit on a plot that worked, and then I proceeded to go and write multiple drafts of it. But yeah, I have to know where I'm going.
And you had written both fiction and nonfiction when it comes to this idea of trauma and going through trauma.
Before I started writing this book, I had written fiction. I've written several essays. I have an essay that's out in the Paris Review. But fiction is kind of my first love, and that's most of what I had done was fiction.
What is it that you find interesting in writing about trauma, especially, as you mentioned, the trauma of displacement, and also the connection to one of the words in the title, salt?
I mean, I guess I have written a fair bit about trauma. I mean, a lot of my short stories touch on trauma. I think that it's if not universal, it's a very widely experienced thing, and it's something that I think, at least in American society, I think we have a hard time talking about it. And I think that that's detrimental to a lot of people's mental health. I think if we can destigmatize trauma and reactions to trauma and recognize that for people with a lot of trauma and also intergenerational trauma, that there's some wisdom to be gained from the fact that we survived, I think that that's a potentially helpful thing. In this book, the significance of the word salt comes from specifically from a theme that gets repeated of salt as an imperfection in precious stones. So one of the characters is a geologist by training, and the main character, Noor, is also interested in geology and in gemstones and minerals. There is a discussion that is sort of an ongoing discussion throughout the book about how when stones come out of the earth, they can be precious gemstones, but they often also have these imperfections of other minerals, and one of those things can be salt. And oftentimes we look at salt as an imperfection in precious stones as a bad thing, as something that's a detriment, that, oh, we have to polish this away and get rid of it. But the fact of the matter is that it's a naturally occurring thing, and it's not something we can avoid. In a similar way, maybe, that trauma is often an unavoidable thing in life. And it's something that happens to us, but it's not something that has to make us feel broken. It's not something that has to make us feel not valuable anymore. And especially because this family in the Map of Salt and Stars undergoes so much trauma over the course of being displaced and facing a number of dangerous situations, they are fighting, at least Noor, especially the main character, is fighting to feel that she still has something to give, and she knows that she has something to give, and she knows that there is life after this, even though I mean, I'm not sure, she doesn't directly say this, but I think it's should be obvious from, again, how people are discussed in the news, that it's not often discussed that there is life after trauma like this, that there is life after displacement, that a person can heal and contribute so much and have a really wonderful, full life. But those things are true, and that's something that Noor learns over the course of the book.
And to pick out another word from the title, and there is no real map to get you there.
The lesson that Noor learns is that you have to make your own map. That, you know, maybe there isn't a map that exists. There certainly is not a map that exists that is personal enough for everyone. but that we can make our own maps. Just like we can redefine home, we can redefine the path that we take to get there, to get to a place where we feel comfortable, where we feel safe, and where we can heal, and that those maps are going to look different for everybody. So yeah, a lot of the book is about the ways that not only that maps in a sort of political sense are tied to so many things like power and the violence of borders as it is visited on displaced people, especially, and people who are migrants or refugees, but also personal maps, that personal maps are so important, maps of not just geographically where we come from, but also where we come from in terms of our place in our community or our family or our identity and the different ties to people or places or history or heritage that make up our identity, and that those maps are just as important.
This is your debut novel.
It is, yeah.
So do you see yourself writing about this theme and about whether it be about Syria or not, or what do you see the next subject being?
Well, so I am at work on a second novel, which is not related to this one. I definitely feel, and if for people who have read my short stories, I write about and around and write myself into Syria all the time because I am writing about identity a lot of the time. I'm writing about themes of home, for sure, themes of finding your place, and also oftentimes, yeah, sort of not overcoming trauma, but like living with trauma and having that be a part of your experience in life. So all of these themes absolutely will find their way into my work. But the next book is actually more about the situation in America. So I'm actually writing a book basically about the history of Syrian immigration to the United States. Again, this is a novel also. It's about the fact that there have been Syrian American communities in the United States for over 100 years, since the 1890s, roughly. People don't seem to know that in this country, and I was really kind of wanting to explore why that is. I think there are a lot of reasons for that. And also the fact that even in the city where I grew up, so the city where I was born, New York City, until about 1940, there was a community, a neighborhood in Lower Manhattan called Little Syria that was actually demolished when the city evicted most of the people living there to build the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel over the neighborhood. And there's only three buildings left of Little Syria now, one of them being a historical Syrian Orthodox church that now is home to a bar. And these buildings are not, I don't think these buildings are being preserved in the way that they could be because they are so incredibly important. And it's part of the city's heritage. And so now when I go down to that neighborhood, I think about that and I want to write about that in a historical way, as well as, again, with this sort of dual timeline structure, the way that this community and also communities across the country, including in the Midwest, where I'm doing some research now, how they've changed over the years, the things they've experienced, the way that the experience someone might have had when they first immigrated into those communities in like the 1930s, or versus the experience somebody might have now passing through there, being maybe in my situation, being growing up in the Syrian diaspora, being Syrian American, being Muslim, and passing through those communities and having a completely different experience. So sort of in a nutshell, those are the things that I want to talk about next.
As you mentioned, your father is Muslim, your mother is
Christian.
Did you make that decision of religious path, or was that made for you?
Nope, I made that decision for myself. And actually, in the Map of Salt and Stars, also the family is multi-faith,
yes.
Because that reflects my experience. And
right.
Also, the fact of the matter is that, and someone asked me about this last night, actually, they asked whether, you know, oh, so are all the children Muslim? Are they all? And I said, look, you know, there sometimes is a misconception that there is a compulsion in religion in multi-faith families, and there is none in most of the families that I know. Most families that are multi-faith give their kids the space to explore and choose. That was, I mean, my experience has been that I have taken the time to explore and decide for myself, and I identify at this point in my life as a Muslim, and I feel very connected to that identity. It also connects me to my roots and to people that I love and to my ancestors. But, you know, certainly the characters in this book also have space to explore that there is one sister who identifies as a Muslim who wears the hijab. Again, there are lots of Muslims who don't wear the hijab. I don't wear the hijab, for example. And that there is a huge constellation of religious choices, identities, and expressions that I wanted to let breathe on the page, just as I see in everyday life.
Were you able to travel to Syria for the...
No, I have not been able to.
So have you ever Have you ever traveled? Never traveled. Yeah. Is it something you want to do?
I would, of course, love to do that. But, you know, given the situation, it's been obviously impossible to this point. And I hope someday that changes.
The name of the novel is The Map of Salt and Stars. And it is a great pleasure to have you on the book show. Thank you very much for spending time with us. A great pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
Again, Jennifer Zeynep Jukadar's debut novel is The Map of Salt and Stars. It is published by Touchstone. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.